Good morning and welcome back to the Explicit Metrics Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning.
Good morning.
290. We're at 290.
10 away from 300. Getting pretty close. We'll have to do something not so amazing for 300.
You mean a bunch of memes?
We'll do that one again.
That was a good episode, podcast, Tommy.
Yeah, let's do funny memes at 300. You know, send us your memes on
funny
the
videos with no audio.
Tag us on Twitter or LinkedIn with all your funny Power BI memes, and we'll discuss them all for our 300 episodes.
We'll just laugh at them. Oh, that's a good one.
That's hilarious.
Who's got another? Oh, this one comes in from Mike DiCarlo.
Yeah.
Oh,
super hilarious.
I get that one.
That's another good. DiCarlo. Wow.
There's lots of us. We're like a whole army of people.
That would be great. That'd be great.
So today's main topic is just going through the mailbag. So we get a lot of questions in from our, you know, Power BI tips / podcast page. We have a form on there. If you have a question or a topic you'd like us to discuss or review, you're more than welcome to go out and submit a question. So we go through a couple of these just to go figure out what the community is talking about, and we'll interact and talk with you about these fun topics. Before we get that, we do have a couple intros. In our last episode, 289. Trying to give it the number before 1290. In our last episode, 289, we had mentioned, hey, Microsoft, you should give us a discount code because we have 5 followers and, you know, all 5 of them would love to have a discount code for the Microsoft Fabric Conference. Well, your wish has come true. There is a...
Hey.
Yes.
That's awesome.
We do have a discount code for you. If you are going to the Microsoft Fabric Conference this March, the conference is the Fabric Microsoft Conference, or the Microsoft Fabric Conference, I guess that's the way you say it. You can visit the website azuredataconf.com, and the main part of the conference goes from the 26th to the 28th, 26th, 27th, and 28th of March, and then there are workshops on the 24th, the 25th, and the 29th. Those are extra, but you can get $100 off if you use the promo code CARLO100 for $100 off your tickets. So I'll put that in the description.
Pay $100 more if you do pool your $100 and add the $100.
And that adds another $100.
And that's at the MGM Grand.
Ooh. At the MGM Grand. Yeah, it's in Las Vegas. I should have mentioned the area. It's actually in Las Vegas.
A chuckle I had today when I was looking at the blog is if you're not familiar with Microsoft Fabric and the new thing, right? Like you land on the page and it's save your seat at the ultimate Fabric learning event.
There's a lot of knitting.
There's a lot of knitting going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Grab your free sweater at the Microsoft Fabric event.
I feel like we're getting spoiled.
Microsoft branching into a new area? The clothing area?
I don't know, AI knitting?
Really well for my consulting gig. So, but I feel like we're getting spoiled. Would you rather have the power to change documentation on the Microsoft site, or the power to provide discount codes at a whim for a conference Microsoft's putting on? And we have both. I feel like we're getting a little spoiled here.
Just feel the power emulating from the podcast. Just feel the power. I think, I guess the better question is, are we on the rebel side, or are we on the dark side? Which side are we on here from the Star Wars perspective?
We're neutral, man.
We're neutral?
an engine to turn out ideas and benefits to the community at large.
Dude,
you know, we're altruistic.
We're the Han Solos, man. We're just there kind of cruising.
All right. I like that. I'll go with that one.
Yeah.
The only other update I have that I have found out, I saw Bernat give us a quick shout out, or not us, but you know, a shout out across Twitter saying that there is a new Power BI desktop. So yesterday on January 31st, a new kind of a major revision of the desktop came out. So there's a new version of desktop out there. If you download and install it locally on your machine, you may want to go check out the newest version. I'm guessing it's just a series of bug fixes, since there's no blog describing all the features that are supposed to be coming out with the next release. So I'm hoping for a solid release here in the next couple of weeks for the February release. What's going on there and what new features are coming in through February. So excited for that one. Looking forward to that as well. Any other kind of news or announcements before we jump in for topics today? All right.
I don't have anything.
Ready to go, man.
Let's jump in. I guess we should tee this over one over, give this one over to Seth. Seth is our mailbag reader on these things. So, Seth, you want to kick us off for our first question of our mailbag?
Point of clarification, Tommy, do we have four questions today?
We actually have five. So I try to separate them by lines. Someone was very ambiguous with their questions.
Numbers sometimes help. But anyway, we'll start with, I believe
we'll work on that.
I believe the first question is, how can we sell Power BI to a Google Shop company? How easy is it for Power BI to fit in a new data? I was trying to help out here. How easy can Power BI fit in a new data platform in an org if we use Google, BigQuery, etc.?
Well, you're out of luck. Power BI doesn't go over there. See you. All right, next question.
Your podcast.
This is whether it's Google or other clouds as well. It could be Google, it could be AWS. Your data could sit anywhere, honestly. So I guess the question, I mean, I would interpret this question is, our data, the tools that we use, are living someplace else. How do we leverage those tools to use Power BI?
Yeah, but we get this one. I mean, it's easier said than done. I feel like we know this, but I think a lot of organizations feel like whether they're ingrained in something like AWS or Google, which has this basically its own Azure kind of platform, they don't think that transition to Power BI is as simple, or there's a whole other set of skills to learn. And I think for me, that's where I'm seeing this question come in, is how can Power BI fit into a new data platform? Usually they also have their own analytics one. I know Amazon tried at one point.
They still have quick insights. So it's still there. Trying. It hasn't gone away.
Right.
How successful it is, it depends on who you talk to, I guess. I mean, I would agree. Yeah. Amazon's solution is like way more developer centric, and Amazon doesn't really have a good business portfolio product offering, right? They're not designed for a, you know, Excel, Word, PowerPoint type solution. Google seems much more positioned for that kind of space because they've got, you know, Google Sheets and other Google things that are googly.
Are very googly. Yes. Yeah. Well, even I hear this all, I really do hear this all the time. Well, we're a Google Data Studio company, so we would have to migrate over to Power BI. And the Google Data Studio is nothing close to, it's a tool, it's not a platform, right? And
access but you still, to data. Well, and access, it does do reporting too.
It does do some. So there's really no equivalent to Power BI in terms of the breadth and depth of what Power BI can do, the Microsoft Business Intelligence Platform. But that doesn't mean organizations are utilizing and heavily dependent on those other platforms. And to me, that's where the question comes in. That's really where that crux of how do we sell Power BI?
Would you ask the question around, I mean, I feel like there's another clarifying question I would ask here. Mm-hmm. Do you all run Macs or Windows?
Yeah, that was my because when you're not in a Microsoft ecosystem, PCs tend to start, like PC usage starts dropping, right? Windows as a thing. So, and Macs become much more prevalent. So that'd be my biggest worry right out of the gate.
That's a great question because
you can't get, while you can do a lot of things without desktop now, because you can do loading data in Fabric, you can have all these pipelines. So you can do a lot of your data engineering pieces that you would normally do. And again, you know, when I look at Google BigQuery, I have done projects in the past where we have let Google BigQuery summarize the data for us, and then we've directly connected to that data and loaded it into Power BI and produced our Power BI reports and things there. To your point, Seth, one of the challenges was everyone in the company was using Macs because it's a Google product, and everything that Google does is 100% in the web browser. I don't think there's anything hard software that you would download to your machine if you need to. So because of that, the challenge was, who's the developer that we're going to hire to build things in desktop? And they had to have a PC. Then there was trying to be this talk of like, let's do a virtual machine. And then it got expensive and people were like, why are we doing this? So I think if you can get over that hurdle, if you already have Windows machines or if your development team around BI already understands those types of patterns, you can just make Google BigQuery or Google a data source to where you're going to build your semantic models.
Questions for you guys. Well, a couple comments, right? you know, one of the challenges going here, like, so can Power BI connect to these data sources? Can you leverage them? Yeah. Yep. You can. Are you integrating Microsoft technologies into a different type of ecosystem? If you're heavily using these areas in AWS and Google BigQuery, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, you are. Is that going to create a problem? There's another mailbag question, which we'll talk about like later on, that kind of speaks to that. But potentially, you'd have to, you know, worry about like tech stack decisions, I think. Mm-hmm. And really, in this scenario, Power BI is the reporting tool.
Correct. Yeah.
Because if you're going down the route of like Google BigQuery, et cetera, you've already got your models, your data formed the way you want, et cetera. Like, to pull this in and then create semantic models for Power BI is bringing in that model into things.
Yes.
So you're gonna have to have that conversation. Does Power BI and it being accessible to the masses and business outweigh that? Because there's going to be certain scenarios where enterprise is going to be building reports on top of this, mm-hmm. but the rest of the organization has access to build these other models and reports. Maybe, but I think it's just there's more to it that you'd have to walk through in order to make that decision and say, yeah, this is a good fit for us, right? Because there is a lot to say, I think, about it being a tool that many, many different people can use and leverage for their own reporting. That is a lot of value. There's just going to be some struggle points that you wouldn't be encountering if you were more of a Microsoft shop or relied on backends of Microsoft.
I would go with that. Like that as well, because there is a egress cost or ingress cost out of Google into Power BI if you are going to do that. So you want to optimize your information. So this starts to become, and again, I'm going to talk very ethereal here. If you're talking bronze, silver, and gold, you're kind of having these different landing areas. Google is the reason I think you're a Google shop, and why you're asking this question potentially is you're probably around marketing, and there's probably advertisement stuff that's happening in your ecosystem. And that's where most people, I think, start in that Google space, is because Google made a platform that where you can do a bunch of advertising for companies, and Google likes has 80% or some ridiculous 75% of the market share for advertising stuff. So that's where all the things happen. So bronze and silver can definitely live or stay inside your Google environment. But if you're thinking about gold, you may want to consider landing that last step of curated, cleaned, well-built tables over to Fabric or Power BI, because now you're now, again, to your point, Seth, this is a tech stack decision, right? You're now splitting your tech stack into two. What else needs to happen to that data? Are you joining it with other data? Is there other things you need to merge it with? Is that stuff also stuck into Google, or is it somewhere else?
So I'm going to challenge here, not saying any of that's irrelevant, but I'm going to say the primary issue of transitioning is honestly less around the technology, but more around the process, both from a consumers and developers, but especially the consumers of getting their data. Seth, I don't think I said anything we'll John Cleese-esque, but no, okay.
We'll talk more later.
Okay. All right, cool. But okay. But I feel like there's a lot more going on from the consumer transition of how they get their data. You're not just transitioning a technology, because again, there's no equivalent to Power BI in terms of the stack, the platform, but you are going to tell now your whole organization and everyone who's getting their data a new way to get it in a new location with a new experience and a new navigation and a new click, you know, what you can click on.
Albeit a better one. Like, it's better if it's easier to use. I agree. And I think that's the reason why people are like looking at it from other clouds, yeah, saying, hey, look, this looks easier than what we're doing today. Yeah. We should explore. Should we do it? And honestly, it's probably cheaper at some degree than other places as well. So that's also another reason why people look for it.
But you're still asking everyone in the org now to point to a different place and basically use this new application.
Yeah, but you assume that the people already like what they're doing with their current data.
Oh, reading. I never assumed anyone likes what they're doing with Google. But
it sounds like it's what you're saying.
Okay.
But my assumption might be is, it sounds like you're saying, oh, we already like what we have. Why would we go move to something else? I would argue probably part of the reason why we're asking this question to ourselves is we're not happy with where we're at. It looks like there's a better tool out there. How could we get over to there? And can we do this without a lot of extra effort. And that's where I'm. That's where I was trying to say earlier. Like,
yeah,
maybe you land some of your gold data into Power BI, and that becomes your place. Now, if you're a Google shop and you're already buying Microsoft Word and Microsoft products inside your Macs, okay, you're one step closer to becoming more Microsoft shop anyways. Even less of a barrier.
So in these scenarios, I have a question. The question is, and let me follow up, Fabric. Does this cause larger issues right up front for this conversation in winning people over as opposed to the way things used to be? And the reason I pose that question is we are talking tech stack differences, but if the proposal here is how do I propose Power BI, was it easier? Do you guys think it was easier in the past to kind of slip in the 90% of the Microsoft architecture underneath the covers because we're just getting a reporting tool versus now you don't see Power BI like it as a front and up, like, yep, we're going to do Power BI. My gosh, what are you doing? Like,
there's a full data
engineering
tool.
There's this entire data engineering tool underneath.
Yes.
Why did we get this when we already have big Google BigQuery, et cetera, et cetera? Is that a struggle point or is that just like something you got to talk past and say, yeah, we'll just disable all that?
That's a great question.
I'm going to go all in, or not necessarily all in, but I think you're 100% right. The adoption side of Power BI is a lot harder if you're trying to say it's Microsoft Fabric. Whereas before, it was like, yeah, whatever tooling you have on the back end doesn't matter because all you're going to be doing is creating a report and you have this whole service for your reports and your data models can come from anywhere. If you're now trying to integrate Fabric and say, oh, we're going to transition everything, that becomes a lot more of a technological push. It becomes a lot more of a process push across the entire work stream. That was never the case. So almost adoption becomes harder if you're trying to incorporate all of Fabric. Whereas before, the only thing you had to worry about is, does Power BI connect to your source?
You know, I'm a little bit torn by your question, Seth. I think I understand where you're going with this one. I have to feel like I like the idea of Fabric because it is sneaky. It takes the best things that Microsoft has been building for the last, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years, and smushes them all together and says, look, we rebranded it as Fabric. Here's pipelines. Here's Spark. Here's storage accounts. Here's, you know, Delta tables. Here's Data Lake Gen 2. Like, so to me, like, doesn't matter what cloud you're in, almost all clouds have equivalent products. All clouds have some sort of data ingestion. All clouds have some sort of, you know, orchestration type tool. If the cloud doesn't offer it directly, there's usually other tools that you can buy that go along with it. Like, you could go buy Databricks. Databricks lives in every cloud. You can go buy dbt, and that helps you orchestrate the engineering of the data. What you get with Fabric, I think, is it's this kind of more user-focused, business user-focused area where it's less, I have to write a bunch of code, and it's a little bit more simpler to use. So I think I like the compelling part of the story of, okay, you're just starting out with Power BI, assuming that that fits your goal and you're willing to spend the money, maybe you do less data engineering inside Google and Google becomes more of a data source to what you're doing inside the Power BI ecosystem. So again, that's a very important decision to decide if you're willing to expand into a new tool. It's not just purely, again, let me put some color here. When you look at AWS and Google, Google has Looker. AWS has Quick Insights. That's their reporting tool. The data comes from wherever it comes from. The data is engineered outside of that tool. You have a unique story in the fact that all of the engineering of that data can be done inside Fabric. All of the heavier analytics or even data science could be done inside Fabric. Now you have an opportunity to say, well, what do we want to do in the future? Do we need to go learn other tools? Maybe, but in Fabric, maybe you don't. Maybe it's all right there and that you just learn one tool that does more of the things you want. Does that make sense? Am I speaking in circles?
It does. I don't agree though. Your point of it being sneaky, I think it's the exact opposite of that, because sneaky in my mind would be a business unit that wants a new reporting tool. And that, I think, flies under the radar a lot of places.
True.
With Power BI, you're getting a lot more than just the reporting tool.
Agree.
So I think potentially it makes it harder because you can't hide it. It's part of the conversation right up front. And what you're doing is you're challenging a tech stack in an organization then, or forcing the conversation of how this thing would fit into that architecture. That's a much larger conversation than just, I need a reporting tool for my business people.
I agree.
And whether or not I'm right, I don't know.
Right. It's more weight to the decision.
It is. Should we move on, or you got any other final comments?
No, I'm good with it. My caution would be, do you have PCs? Are you comfortable with that? Are you moving that direction in general? Do you have other Microsoft products engaged? If you do, then I think the decision will be easier for you to make.
I'm going to put this in our topic board, but can we close the book on just Power BI if you were only using Power BI and not Fabric? Can we still close the book and say you're complete? Or do we have to integrate? Because that's where I'm hearing the conversation go back and forth between you guys.
What do you mean? I'm just saying it's upfront part of the conversation. I mean, you can absolutely disable stuff and just use Power BI. That's not what I'm saying. You don't have to use Fabric with all that.
I just think I think it gives you more opportunity, right? I think Fabric just gives you more opportunity to build other things that are going to be cheap to run and get the reports out that you need for your team.
Yeah.
And one other thing as you were mentioning here, I didn't write it down, but I should have written it down, so I almost didn't forget it. But I almost forgot it here, was the idea of identity providing, making sure you have the right users in the right environment and who can log into what stuff. Again, if your organization already has Microsoft 365 accounts, or you're paying for that, and you're paying for something in Google, that's another consideration. Yeah. Again, this is a very, like you're saying,
are you spooling up an entire tenant just to support this thing?
Yeah. Exactly right. Maybe. Do I really want, I think the main hinge point for me is, do you already have Microsoft products and licenses for things already? Are you just buying Office, or are you actually buying like the full suite of like the Microsoft things? So if your company already has an M or an E license, an M license, or a Microsoft 365 license for people, it's much easier for you to get into Power BI, because by default, you can go get the programs, you can use the things. If you don't have those things, now you're paying additional licensing for those things. And now every user who touches Power BI, either now you're building a custom application where you're embedding things, which is fine. There are solutions out on the internet that make that easy to use. Or you now have to license everyone so that you can get into PowerBI.com at a certain level so that everyone can just use it. Again, not wrong. It's just something to consider. Anyways.
Right.
Your mileage will vary.
And despite our pleading with all of our people to add names, all of these are anonymous today. So, hey, maybe this is the same person just repeating the same thing over.
Just Tommy asking these questions.
The next question. Yeah, thanks, Tommy.
Tommy's mom.
We have questions in other
Tommy's
ways.
Tommy's mom doing all these questions. Tommy, I didn't know your mom was using Google.
Next question. Yeah. Hi, guys. Love the show. Tommy's the best. That's it.
Oh, no. Yeah, what the heck? Where's that question? How did that get in there?
Very handsome. That would be the time.
Hi, guys. Love the show. All the topics have been very helpful and enlightening, especially hearing your thoughts and opinions. With Microsoft's push changing from data sets, renaming to semantic model, I think someone forgot to change the wording in the service portal when requesting build permissions. It still has data owner, smiley face. I suppose the subject to cover is about the issues that arise when the business changes but forgets communication and things get lost or forgotten in the process.
Wow, does this feel relevant or what?
Like the two thoughts right off the top of my head are how a bunch of words said in a podcast don't relate to the technical documentation anymore.
Feels like this hits home. This really hits home recently.
How one word of change can change a mountain of documentation.
Yeah. How relevant? I love the question. Obviously, aside from what just happened on the last few episodes for us, talking about goals and stakeholders and objectives, and the words have meaning. I've seen this even in the micro element of when I was a data analyst and building a report, change the name of a title, it threw everybody off. And the little changes that we can do can have a big impact. And I was not aware of building just a normal marketing report, but changing the name of something just so it could fit into a visual can change everyone's perspective and also change what they're perceiving. We have a lot of responsibility here and outside of just that micro instance of a report, but man, our ability and our responsibility for definitions, I think always goes understated.
Okay. So you're thinking, you know, the report builder to the audience.
Yeah. And I'm saying that's just one micro instance of that.
Thoughts on this one, Mike, or you want me to dive in?
You go ahead and jump in. I have some thoughts, but I'm not sure if I'm writing some notes here down so I can put some stuff together here.
I think it's a simple question, right? So think the business changes and forgets communication. It happened, forgetting communication between teams especially is a tough one. I think this doesn't end like on a high, the way I think about this, three levels. On a higher level, well, I'll walk through that, like ways to solve long-term and then reactive fix. I'm not going to dispute them all right here, but like the high level ones, I think this is, like I said, tough until all parties recognize that there's a data lineage, right? That there are systems of data that work together and there are teams that are owners of each of this data. So I think this on the larger level starts to fix itself as a company becomes more data literate, because a lot of those efforts in pushing out how data can transform an organization, how a company uses data, also push forward that there are different groups and those groups are aware of the dependencies between each other. And there's a lot more communication around how data changes versus, I would say, the modus operandi, if you don't have that, is groups aren't aware, or they're just doing the changes based on some other requirements that they have to do. And then you get disconnects between the systems that rely on each other because there is no process to make sure that change gets pushed out. You want me to keep going, Mike?
Yeah. I mean, I'll throw a couple notes in here too. Like I get disappointed sometimes when Microsoft takes a big pivot on direction for some of their communication on what they're doing. It would have been nice if they just left some things alone and just kind of let them be. I think that's more of a challenge for the people who are, eventually it will all get fixed, right? Someone's going to go through all the pages and go through and do the, you know, control F and find all the documentation. I mean, even now Microsoft is moving their tools so fast that the documentation has sometimes a hard time to keep up. You just look at the instructions and, yesterday I was looking at the new feature that was released by Microsoft, which is like the cloud connections, which is basically managing shared connections to data sources that are in the cloud. And you can manage them, you can rename them, you can add people to them. But the documentation is very light on what it's supposed to be doing and why it's there. There's even an admin setting that looks like it does nothing, like it doesn't really tell you what it's there and what it's doing. So it's up for us, I think that's the community, is to come back to Microsoft and say, we don't really understand this. Can you explain why this is here? Or, you know, hey, this is missing, or this is named incorrectly now, because Microsoft is going to pivot. They're going to change things so that makes sense to them. And maybe there was a very strategic way of positioning sales now, because now they want to change it from data set to semantic model, right? In my opinion here, the reason you make that change is because the language of the community or the language of what other tools are doing are using this concept of, well, we can have a central semantic model. And that's the language by which other companies are asking for. Well, we need that. Well, you only have this thing called data set, Microsoft. What does that mean? Well, and then Microsoft has to explain, well, so data set is a semantic model. It's the same. It's equivalent. So I think maybe this is potentially the industry aligning a bit more in terminology. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft is adopting some of that. And again, you're going to have these weird cases where the documentation doesn't match. That's a people and a process challenge.
I think you guys are speaking to two really...
We are.
Integral elements here in terms of, you talked about data literacy, which is more than just communicating. But, and then there's also too, a lot of organizations will constantly go through not just, we're good now. We understand our words and our terminology.
Yeah, but it changes over time.
Constant growth. And a lot of times, especially with adoption, there's rapid change. And rapid change usually leads to a lot of misunderstanding. So we always have to be on top of it, but we also have to know when we're doing Power BI or when we're adopting Power BI or integrating a new system, there's going to be a lot of rapid that closed mode change that we have to do and evolve. But that usually is where the literacy gets lost, because like, hey, we just need to push these processes through, push these new technologies through. And that's where the literacy gets lost. But again, That's part of the culture. So those two are hand in hand because they're never, you're never done with those. You're never done with literacy.
Yeah, I think
I agree.
I think we are. I'm on a different track. Yeah, I might be answering a different question because the way I took this was something changes in the business, and that's a structural change to data, right? Like an example of this is like there's a data change, and because CRM, the system, decides to change 5 key columns that we've been using for all of our reporting. Yeah.
Happens.
That's kind of where I took it. Yep. As opposed to, I think there is a process that should happen, but like marketing rebrands or rechanges and renames. Yeah, like, happens. Yeah, somebody's got to go through and get the whole bucket list of things that have to be updated and changed because, yes, otherwise you find yourself in this kind of no man's land of, you know, we change something and have something that doesn't align to it anymore.
Yeah.
I do want to complete the thought on my take on it, though. Mm-hmm. Because sure. it is a problem that I encounter quite a bit and have in the past where data not completely changes, but it's a new column. It's a column name change. It's something breaks. And I think long term, a couple solutions that I found work are and require that groups understand each other are shared ERDs, right? Like a business. I'm with a business unit. We're like, here's the data source, our documentation. Here's what we rely on from you. So when you make a change, just let us know. Mm-hmm. And another way I think is also implementing like data governance committees so that like as changes happen from system to system, you're forcing this conversation if it can't happen neutrally. So that would be my long-term. And then a couple ideas for reactive fixes. Come along, and I suppose, you know, this first one could fit into documentation name changes as well, but like your own team documentation, is it properly architected? And the reason I point that one out is many times what I've seen is somebody who develops a report and all of the data source connections and how they pull them in are all that report name. Well, that means nothing unless you understand that report. And or even when you do understand the report, you have to go back, spend the time to figure out what you connected to, what you're using, et cetera, et cetera.
It's no big deal. Versus the report's the documentation, right? You know, the Excel file is the documentation. Just go read the Excel file and that process is in there.
Right. Versus properly architecting your own documentation where it's like data source columns being used, right? And then where? So the source system table model is a cadence I've used typically where then I can figure out what's breaking. And then also like the monitoring part of this, every model, and this is kind of a no-brainer but falls into this, every model that you're setting up a refresh on should have a centralized failure notification email box. Because guaranteed, if something changes in your structure, it's going to start failing. And if you don't have that at least that piece of warning, you're not going to be able to go figure out like what are the things that are broken and fix them. It's just going to be a giant firestorm. So those were my thoughts, albeit probably in the wrong direction on this one.
No, I don't think it's the wrong thing. I think what you're speaking more to is communication is hard. And it's hard across everything you're doing. And this is just one indication of Microsoft trying to communicate to us. They change something and then everyone needs to get on board with the change and what's going on. And there's going to be always residual knowledge laying around. I mean, there's how many books and how many websites have been made with the old information? Like you look at Power BI Tips, we've got hundreds of pages talking about data sets with screenshots in it. The day they changed the field pane to the data pane or the data pane to the field pane, whatever they did change there, everyone's, and I kept looking at this going, I'm so glad I didn't do general documentation for Power BI because all your stuff breaks and it's a lot of work to stay up with the tool because the tool keeps shifting so fast. Mm-hmm. They haven't locked it down yet. And so, you know, you look on, even looking on Microsoft's website, you go to powerquery.com. They have screenshots of Power BI Desktop when it had a black bar on the right-hand side for the field panes.
Yes, yeah. Nostalgia.
It's still there. Like, they didn't change it. So they haven't updated even their marketing materials. Like, so it's going to happen. But I think to your point, Seth, I really liked your point around, you know, a central place. So you can solve some of these problems with better communication. Having a plan on how to communicate is worth it. I'm thinking initially for companies is, a community of practice where there's a documented page. You can go here. Everything you learn or everything you build or knowledge that you're gathering goes there. That way, as you're doing it, part of the process is build my report, build my data set or semantic model, build my things, document them, put it in a central spot. And that way, when there are questions, or to your point, Seth, when stuff does change, because it will change, you at least have a process to say, here's where we're going to communicate it. And hopefully, as you continue to enrich that data culture, people realize, oh, the latest information is the COP. Oh, I see there's some things updating there. Oh, here's the next documentation of the data model. And I'll admit, it's hard to keep that stuff current and up to date. It just is.
It takes people.
It takes people, and you're going to have to spend real effort to make sure that's a value. Like, your data is valuable. It's going to take time and money to make sure that those things stay up to date. But that is at the, you're doing that in a way, you're doing that because you don't want to sacrifice confusion later on.
Yeah.
I like that question. Good question. Tommy, any other final thoughts if you want to move on to the next one?
No, I think the biggest thing is I would ask is the difference with us is we are always monitoring the new changes in Power BI. My question would be, do you assign people to be accountable for certain changes? Or like you said, there's a mailbox, sure, but are there people who are monitoring those changes that you're talking about, Seth? That's where I was basically pondering.
Yes.
And they live on the COE.
Obviously not a full-time job, but it's going to be a good amount of their time.
You're saying monitoring those changes proactively or
proactively?
Well, yeah. And that you need structure around that, to Mike's
point. 100%. Yeah. Like, there is someone. It's a team of people that do that. It's the center of excellence. It's the people that are most passionate about it.
Yeah.
I think the COE is the team that is responsible. Like, when a new setting in the admin portal shows up, someone's got to go look at it. Do we turn it on? Do we leave it off? Does it default to on automatically like Fabric did? Like, hey, by the way, it's off for 3 months. And then in a couple of months, it's just going to default to on. You're going to get it whether you like it or not. So, I mean, I do think there should be a team regularly reading the blog, regularly going to conferences, either online or in person, something like that, getting knowledge and making sure that they're following really smart people. Yeah. Probably not this podcast because you're not going to really get much from this thing. But, you know, other places that have a lot of great knowledge, you know, follow the Chris Webb's blog, follow the Microsoft blog, follow Guy in the Cube. Mm-hmm. They've got really good stuff to say, and they're going to regularly add value into you, and you'll hear other opinions and other things that are going to help inform your decisions about what you need to do as an organization. So I think that's strategic, very important.
Christina Ferris in the chat makes, I think, a good point. She says, I think a big problem for BI teams is not including documentation of their reports in their time estimates to the business. So it never gets done nor prioritized. True.
Yeah. Right?
Like, and I think that's where work item management tools help out. But even allotting the capacity of your team's time, it's a huge thing. I don't think many business teams do it, nor business intelligence, but that's the value there where you're baking in those extra efforts always, right? Like it's, hey, great. I'm glad your estimate is like you can get this done in 2 days. It's 2.5, right? Because you're going to take a half a day. You've got to lay out this documentation, whether that belongs in the report, whether it belongs in some central location, et cetera, et cetera. It's got to be there, right?
Right.
This is where documentation is something where I think Copilot needs to really help out.
So good. Yeah, I know. If you want to spend energy, it's almost table stakes in how simple Copilot is for coding, right? Where the big value is.
Explain this formula.
Yeah.
It should be everywhere.
I just made a bunch of changes. Here's the documentation. Update it for me.
Yeah. Here's my Timdle file of this model. Compare the last Timdle to the new Timdle. Summarize for me the changes between these two documents. And by the way, anything that's new, explain it, how that formula is written. Now, and you have future, to reread it.
Click the button, update documentation. Yes, please.
Yeah. But the challenge, so here's where, okay, this is going to get very like Skynet version of this. So this is actually dovetails very well in here. So I actually have something here I want to share with you guys. So I will put this one out here just because I think this is funny as well. So we have our last episode. I was talking to Seth the other day, and I was like, hey, Seth, we had made something up, and I have just recently purchased Copilot for my Microsoft account. Well, believe it or not, You can have Copilot prompt you for emails. You can have Copilot summarize a statement. You can have Copilot do things in Teams. I can literally say, I want this, this, and this in bullet point items, and it writes a nice hello, welcome, all this other fluff that goes with it. So what we're doing now is we're literally saying, Copilot told me to say it. Like, this is what Copilot told me to say. So, you know, instead of just making an abbreviated, dense conversation with a couple key items, we're now using AI to add fluff and all these other things into things. And it feels like at some point in time, we're going to have two people on either end of an email writing bullet points to AI that will now create these long paragraphs. So I'm going to write and say, hey, Copilot, write Tommy an email about this. And it's going to write two paragraphs. And then Tommy's going to get the paragraphs and he's going to go, hey, Copilot, summarize this meeting into three bullet points. And then he's going to see the bullet point. So we're going to literally just be like adding words just to add words because Copilot is writing it and then reading it and then reinterpreting it for the next person. Like we're literally just volleying data back and forth with AI nowadays. Like it's going to be crazy.
I didn't want to say this, but I have to say I have a problem with this. I have a problem. Just because you're communicating does not mean you're actually pushing data literacy or you're actually communicating. That's a one side of communication. If you actually break down the word, just because I'm sending out a TMDL, summarize this TMDL, I push that out to Confluence, I'm done. That does not mean that we're actually pushing exactly what we're saying, what a definition is. More importantly, do people understand this? More importantly, we're talking about all these external things, what happens in the Power BI service. But what about all the nuance, the more important things that an organization goes through on their own business definitions? You either are going to build a Copilot, your own bot or your own Copilot, which you can do, but more importantly, just because you're pushing out words into your business sphere does not mean that you are actually pushing your data literacy.
I was taught that with the right prompts, I can do anything with AI.
You can do a lot, but it doesn't mean that people are understanding it. And I know I'm the AI guy and I love it all. I love it all.
But I would argue this is a step in the right direction. Well, so a couple things have to happen here, right? If I just give you a DAX formula and say, here you go, is that enough for most people to understand what that measure is doing in the model? Usually, probably not, unless you actually are understanding and studying DAX. Then the second part of this is, okay, so if I can use AI to do some of that lightweight lifting work around what that means, great. I agree with you, Tommy. There's probably other enhancements that need to be made around these measures and why they exist and why they're there. But the other thing too is you have to make sure people read it and understand it. I can only do so much to make sure I have documentation to support the models.
Right, but you're missing. I'm not worried about the other BI analysts understanding the measure. They can figure it out. They're a BI analyst. They're smart enough to understand some DAX. I'm concerned about the consumers understanding the data. That's where my focus is here. And you can push a measure saying this is a, you know, two trains coming at each other at a certain distance or whatever your mathematical formula is. But is pushing out those definitions that are a lot more nuanced, that are a lot more called ambiguous rather than just DAX measure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs a human involvement, but I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that if you're just trying to check the box and get documentation at the door, again, I'm arguing Copilot should be the tool or Copilot-like things should be the kind of tools that are proliferating this documentation and making it easier. Like, automation of that kind of stuff, I think, is immensely helpful. And I got to be honest, as a developer, I have used what does this code do? And it explains for me very well what that code is doing. So, you know, with a little bit of additional data context or context around why this thing exists, Copilot should be able to pick up on some very simple things. And again, my idea here is like, okay, is any documentation better than no documentation? Yes. Is it perfect? Probably not, but it's a step in the right direction. I'm just saying,
no,
I'd rather just have Microsoft make things easier for me to document. Like there's another whole area or conversation around this one around documentation that we're getting into now, but there's a huge problem with figuring out where stuff comes from. There's not a great way of going from the visual all the way to the data source. You can't. And I think people ask those questions and people really do want those kind of answers at some point. So we're going to have to get there eventually. Microsoft's just not willing to put the time to build that type of tooling into the tool today because there's other bigger fish to fry. Like getting the data lake to work. But Greggy, I think we'll get there where it's going to have to be more comprehensive like that.
Yeah. Greggy is going into like the sum table field adds all numbers, blah, blah. It's not going to mean anything to anybody. That's not what I'm talking about. Like documentation for the purposes of data lineage and or on a high level, having somebody have a repository of information that they can go and understand what we're developing and what we built without having to ask me. Like the danger for BI devs or anybody in general is we build things and we answer all the questions and don't understand how large that impact is into an organization when I leave, right? Like all of that goes with me. And what requires is if we didn't do any of that documentation for other people or even high level, I think it's in two ways, for other people and for high level reference for myself so that I can quickly triage a problem because I'm not going to remember everything. Yeah. There's hundreds or thousands of pipelines, different things where data goes. I don't want the uber detail. What I'm suggesting, and I think Mike is too, is that there is the uber detail in documentation. It's in the code. It's in places where people can see it. LLMs and AI and Copilot should be able to, like, on a high level, summarize that for different purposes.
Correct. And
so I think we move on to the last question, or at least one more question.
Yeah.
And I'll although it's opposite, where the person leads with a question and then says a bunch of things or has a recommendation, I'm going to start with that and then I'll end with a question. Okay. So big thank you for having these podcasts. Love listening to them. Still wishing for the day for which you would do them every day of the week. But
full oh my respect, word.
This was me.
You're going to kill me. Yeah.
This was me.
This thank one's Tommy you for sure. That thought. Yeah. Yes, Tommy's the, yes, Tommy's the funniest and the handsomest.
Yes. Also had a recommendation or a request to add a other category in our podcast like thing.
Request form.
Not everything fits into the request form. So with that being said, thank you for your question. Per your request, I'd love a podcast on technology. So this is the opposite, Tommy. This is why I was poking you in the first question. I'd love a podcast on technology influencing process versus process influencing technology.
Yes.
Initial thoughts.
Oh, that's a whole...
The answer is yes.
Yes.
I think we actually discussed this partially
maybe
not long ago related to like organizational streamlining of data culture, where having a mixed grab bag of tools creates inefficiencies in organizations. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, right, like knowledge gaps, support problems, et cetera. So like trying to rally around tech stacks, I think, is part of this conversation where technology is the focus. And trumps or supersedes, you know, that conversation mm-hmm. rather than process always defining like a direction which you go. But what are some others that you guys can think of?
Well, I think the irony here is almost, it could not be sweeter, but the idea of the AI side, that's a perfect example here of technology influencing the process we do. Mike, I'll give the perfect example. You talked about the Timdall file or the Timdall project folder. Mm-hmm. Well, I can now take that folder, use a tool like Cruiser AI and say, hey, explain everything going on. Basically give it a role, explain what I want it to do and provide that documentation, what needs to be fixed. If I was a data czar, if that was a role, that's exactly what I would be implementing, saying everyone's getting Cruiser AI, everyone's getting a license, an open AI key, and we're Timdall files. You're going to look and take a through the lens of this Cruiser AI platform. Also, when it comes from a consumer point of view, I'm absolutely integrating, to your point, LLMs, whether it's the Llama Chat or whatever some of the new LLMs platforms are. And I'm implementing that part of my developer process, but more importantly, I'm implementing that part of Copilot Studio right now. That would be absolutely something that changes what I do. Changes not only the process of building a report, but the funnels that it goes through. So even though I just said Copilot is not going to solve everything, it's absolutely going to change my process. And it's absolutely going to change how I perceive the data throughout the journey.
Yeah, I'm going to go on like, so I feel like this is kind of a chicken and egg scenario to some degree, right? You use technology to try to solve a problem, but then sometimes the problem isn't the technology. Sometimes the problem is your process, and or there's a new technology that it appears that is doing things more efficiently. I would say most of what drives technology is time and cost. And again, that sounds very vanilla, but let me explain a little bit more here. I think what I mean by that is, given enough time, you can build the best solution you would ever want. And the amount of money you spend on something or don't spend on something is where you invest your money, right? So for example, I may want to go with Power BI because it's a better cost savings than us doing everything in Excel or another program or something else, right? So the reason I see people moving away from Click and Tableau is because it's expensive comparatively to what they want to do with Power BI. Power BI is a much more reasonable program. So the technology has been able to compete, change, and that is now, the technology now is influencing my process because I want to take advantage of the faster time because I can deliver quicker, or I want to take advantage of lowering my costs by using this new tool. So I think those two pieces influence why we change with the technology pieces and what Microsoft's doing there, right? So Microsoft also envisions a world where low code, no code solutions are going to rule the world. They have done their analysis. They know there's going to need to be hundreds of apps across organizations and companies. And, you know, instead of us building like power apps in this case, we build data apps. These are apps around data. So we're building all these things. And so what I think is happening here is Microsoft is saying, look, we're going to produce something that's easier. Now, what does this do? I think by changing the technology and by thinking about things differently, another example here would be the medallion architecture. By changing from SQL, what you've been doing previously, to a medallion type architecture, the technology under the hood changed, but the principles of data warehousing have not. Those are still the same. We're still talking about star schemas, facts, and dimensions. So in principle, some of your process still remains consistent, but you're now able to do new things with new technology pieces. So I don't know how if I'm even answered the question. This is just maybe random thoughts around how technology influences process and how process is adapted to the technology. Because it goes both ways. I don't think you could have entirely one direction or the other.
Well, I like your point, which is regardless of which direction you're going, the goal is to solve the business problem. Mm-hmm. And that's typically
with less time and with less money.
In one of two paths.
Yep.
Efficiencies to save money.
Yep.
Or revenue generation to make money.
That's it. That's all we do. Right. Anything other than those two things.
As long as I took this, like my answer on more of a business level, related to those, rather than like kind of enterprise BI. Because if we think about I think about how this question is posed, all I could think is, well, if I'm technology influencing process, that's the act like IT part of our phrase. Think like the business, act like IT, right? What are we already doing where we're pushing technology and influencing process? It's one of the main things we talk about all the time. Automation of manual data processes. We're saying there's a technology that should influence and stop you doing virtuous waste activities where you're burning company time doing things that we can automate. Right. That to me is an example of technology influencing a process, and it should be done much, much more. And I think one of the most valuable points about data culture and literacy within an organization is people don't know that this can that they can do this. So that does scale, because I think that short term efficiency, which there is gains in, also elevates into having ETL for enterprise systems. Right? Having processes where you're centralizing data allow you to scale for long-term efficiencies, because data access and the arena of having all of this data together for people leads to smarter decisions, leads to better analysis, leads to revenue generation in many areas or additional efficiencies. So I think in many cases, like choosing to implement technology to solve data problems is the answer, like is what is happening as you start going down this you know path. But ultimately it's mainly about what we're solving are efficiencies in data access, in data collection and consolidation, and like semantic models, right? Like is even one of those. We're creating a repository of business aggregated business information that allow for fantastic analysis across many different reports or across the business unit to allow them to gain more insights. And these are all technologies that we're pushing on the business that they otherwise are just going to fall into because they need some reporting, but don't understand, I think, the scale at which we can help solve a lot of these problems by the technology that we're pushing. And that is Power BI, it's semantic models, it's Fabric, it's all of this entire ecosystem that allows them to start at a point and then scale up, but it's still all under the efficiencies or revenue generation. And the power of data in an organization, I don't have to rehash, like go out and read the articles that have been written for the last 20 years.
Yeah, we don't have that.
How large the proliferation of data has been. But when companies start to leverage that data, they are setting themselves apart from their competitors by leaps and bounds. And you guys know this, right? So like going down this journey, you're adding so much value. And I think in general, pushing technical solutions to these data problems for organizations to rapidly evolve into now, as opposed to it being this long strategy, and that's the only thing you can plug into is a return on investment way down the road versus incremental wins that are getting you down that path immediately.
You know, the more I think about this idea of process versus technology or which one influences, I'm leaning so much, I think to your point, if you'd agree, that technology really dictates process. If I had a bike to get to work or I had a car to get to work, that's going to dictate what time I wake up, what I bring with me, and what route I take. In the same fashion, I've seen Power Apps dictate and completely change a team's process. What we have in Power BI, the solution allows us to be more business facing. So I don't know if that's agreeing with you or if I'm taking that another step further, Seth, but to me, I'm leaning more that really technology is the not sole influencer, but the primary influencer of what process is actually going to be put in place.
I think I don't disagree with you. I think the danger around and why people don't like technology, you know, technology first, then is it sometimes pigeonholes you, right? Like in IT sectors, you should be constantly innovating. You have to be constantly looking for the next best thing. And if some competitor comes out with a tool or a technology that far surpasses what you're using, like in every way, shape, or form, and all you say is, nope, we're not going to do it, you're choosing technology over a better path. I think the thing I would caveat to your thing, Tommy, is whether it's a new process that drives to a technology or a technology that is driving towards a process, if the objective is for a positive net benefit to the business in efficiencies or revenue generation or something along those lines that impact the business, then yes, it's a good decision. Mm-hmm. But solely choosing something purely because it's a technology that you're familiar with or you want to push on people may not be like is where I go, you know, no, because those are bigger decisions because people know technologies, they know skills, they, you know, you're revamping or reorganizing depending on the decisions you make around that.
Yeah, for better or for worse. The technology may influence it, but it may not be a net benefit. So completely agree.
I'm maybe going off the reservation here, and I know we need to wrap here for final thoughts, but as I think about this particular topic and exactly this question here, technology versus process or people versus technology, however you want to kind of focus on this one, I think what we're seeing is there is by making data engineering more of a commodity, we're now able to allow people to explore, test. There was a barrier to this technology world because there's a lot of, you had to write everything in code. Not everyone knew how to write code. The next generation of children that are going to be raised up, I mean, even my kids, all of them know how to use computers. Devices has been a part of their life. They've had high-speed internet since they were kids. Like, do you? We remember when you had a dial. Like, the internet wasn't
there was no
thing
internet.
When I was young. Like, so
gateway. I think the original gateway.
Yeah, people are making new careers on just making YouTube videos. Like, this is stuff that never existed before. So there are things that are happening now in the technology world where the data and the analytics is now, I think, accelerating the importance of those things. Every company, I think, knew it before, but it may have been cost prohibitive to store all the data. It may have been cost prohibitive to hire really sharp people to manage databases the entire time. What's happening now, and especially with Power BI and Fabric, is we're bringing data down to a commodity type level. So what's happening now is we've got more data than ever before. It's continuing to grow at a prolific rate. AI is generating a whole bunch of content, and or we can use AI to analyze new video and video content. Like someone was talking in the chat window here about, hey, it'd be really cool if I could have like a recorded video of walking through my data model and then have that text be searchable, where people could, you could literally record your documentation, have it in, and Microsoft has an AI video indexer that does exactly this. You can have a whole bunch of videos talking about your data models and what your documentation is doing. And that is the documentation. It's going to save us time. It's going to save us money. And we're going to be able to use technology in new ways. And this is why, again, I'm going to be a bit weird here. This is why I'm hearing all these companies. I think Duolingo, I just saw an article. Duolingo just fired a bunch of their contractors that were generating quizzes to help you learn another language. Duolingo is a language app. Yep. And what they said is they can incorporate AI to build tests faster than hiring contractors to do the same thing. If I can pay a computer program 50 cents an hour to run versus someone $35 or $40 an hour or whatever the contractor rate is, I will do that every time. So again, the technology is saving you money and it's saving you time potentially. And so these things, we have to take notice on them, and companies are continually competing on data. One great example of people competing on data here is the Boston Red Sox. I just said that just for Tommy because I want to hear.
I'm out. Thanks, guys.
Isn't the story around the Boston Red Sox where they were one of the first baseball teams to start trying to use AI and analytics to try and
They were using advanced statistics with Moneyball. I think that's what you're
talking
about.
AI. Let's 90s. Call it AI, whatever
no,
it is.
No, well, not AI. They're dumb. They're non-AI.
No, nobody's better than the Yankees.
They got no intelligence. They're just artificial.
Oh my goodness. Spewing from the podcast mic. Tommy has a platform. He's willing to use it.
Poke that bear.
Oh, I did. I did poke that. That was a softball lob to you, Tommy. And I think you knocked that one out of the park. So I mean
Corey, Derek, okay.
But whether it's them or nothing else, like you look at Amazon, clearly they are a logistics company. Yes, they sell you goods, but their whole, like, they have outperformed everyone else, and they're outperforming everyone else with their products because their data and their automation is second to none. They can out-deliver anyone else. And where do I buy most of my stuff? All on Amazon, because it's a much better experience and the technology has changed. So all this to say, basically, is, you know, the technology will change. People will find new innovative ways. Data is going to continue to increase. So stay close to this space and continue working on more, faster, better, and more efficient ways of doing things. Because if you're not making money or saving money with your reporting or your data,
you're the Boston Red Sox.
You're the Boston Red Sox wasting all your money. That's exactly where I was going with that one. No, not at all. Anyways, let's do quick final thoughts and we'll wrap here. Tommy, final thoughts.
Keep doing your mailbags, guys. I think all these questions are so relevant and they're all related when you think about AI, technology, process, and data literacy. Technology is continuing to move faster than people can comprehend or people can stay up with, much less an organization. If you are someone who loves this stuff, keep reading, keep reading up on it, because the role of someone being on top of this is going to be a requirement. It's going to be either that unicorn role or someone who's going to be so heavily dependent on an organization to be on top. Like, oh, I know what's going on with the technology. I've seen these latest updates, but more importantly, I see how this can be a solution for us. So if you love this stuff, keep reading up on it. Keep being on top of it. So,
Seth, any final thoughts?
love these questions. So thank you very much to those that submitted them. Keep them coming. We love your feedback. We love talking about the different ways in which you're thinking about things in your business intelligence world or journey. And we'll keep doing episodes like this one.
Excellent.
Hopefully answering them or just doing our stupidity.
So in true fashion here, so I'll end here with you with a great dad joke at the end of this. This way people actually want to listen to the end here. So how does Chuck Norris do data analysis? Anybody? He doesn't need data. He already knows the answer. Anyways, with that, I will say thank you very much for the questions. This is great things to think about. Stay close to data and career things. And again, keep remembering, like, it's going to be, is it making you money? Is it saving you money? If you focus on those things and focus your efforts around those pieces, that will definitely help your data career and move you forward there as well. If all else fails, just remember that the co-pilot told me to say that. Just in case you ever need an excuse to why you said something you did. So that is my new excuse from now on. I'm using Copilot everywhere. It is becoming my thing. So Copilot told me to say it. Anyways, thank you all very much. We appreciate your time on the podcast. We hope you had a fun time and enjoyed the conversation today. Many more to come. We'll see you next time.